This is a new day for New York 19.
Where is the good officers at? If 11 of them is no damn good, we want to know where the good ones at.
I believe the goal is beating Donald Trump.
Watch your
tongue. What do you mean? She just called me names.
So I don't give a f-
she spoke the truth. Whoa, look at that. There's a beaver 5 feet from us. Usually they whack their tails on the water and try to scare you off. That was a pretty brave beaver.
We've learned some tough lessons, and those lessons are we have to hold people accountable.
Hey there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. On this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we report on how the Central Park 5 case is reverberating on the campus of Vassar College. And we'll hear some of my interview with Massachusetts Congressman Richard Neal, chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. But first, employees of the former St. Clair's Hospital in Schenectady are continuing their fight to get their pensions back. State Senator Jim Todisco spoke as about 100 people rallied at the state capitol this week, what's expected to be the last week of the session. In March, the St. Clair's Corporation petitioned the state Supreme Court to dissolve, claiming it had run out of money to distribute to some 1,100 pensioners. Todisco, a Republican from the 49th District, in May filed legislation to halt the dissolution of the corporation until an investigation is completed to determine how the hospital's pension fund, which included state money, collapsed.
If 1,100 of the constituents for the majority leader in the Senate and the Speaker of the Assembly and my colleagues in both majorities were going to lose their pension system, this bill for transparency to find out why it was happening would have been passed a month ago.
A member of the Board of Trustees at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie has resigned amid controversy over her role as prosecutor in the 1989 Central Park jogger case. WAMC Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn reports.
Linda Fairstein oversaw the prosecution of the 1989 Central Park jogger case, in which five Black and Latino teens were wrongly imprisoned for the rape of a white woman. The case re-entered the spotlight recently with the Netflix miniseries When They See Us, and it was the miniseries that sparked a Change.org petition started by a Vassar College student to have Fairstein, also a best-selling crime novelist, removed from the board. Deborah Cohen is co-chair of the Civil Rights Practice Group of law firm Newman Ferrara. She's also an adjunct professor at Pace University Law School.
As a civil rights lawyer and a Vassar alum, my first reaction to hearing about this was to feel gratified that there are students at Vassar who are paying attention and are willing and able to try to take action to address injustice. At the same time, I can't help but feel that perhaps the college has missed an opportunity to really do something substantive to move the dialogue along and address some of the issues that led to the incredible travesty of justice against these young men. Wouldn't it be take us to yet another level in understanding what happened to these young men to have Linda Fairstein and Letterer in the same room with Corey Wise, Yusef Salam, and the others, and the prosecutors who came behind them and overturned their convictions, and have a real explanation of everyone's point of view?
She refers to Susan Letterer, a prosecutor on the Central Park 5 case who just resigned as lecturer at Columbia Law School. Randolph McLaughlin is an alumnus of Columbia Law School and professor at Pace University Law School.
This is, to me, a part of a larger pattern that I see in colleges. And as a law professor and as a litigator, it concerns me greatly. And it started, in my opinion, at Harvard with Ronald Sullivan, who was representing Weinstein in the rape cases here, the sexual assault cases in New York. He was a dean of one of the undergraduate houses. And the students protested that he didn't make them feel comfortable, that they were concerned about the environment. And Harvard then decided not to reappoint this man as the dean. He was the first African-American dean of an undergraduate house, only because he was representing someone they didn't like. So here, Fairstein is a member of the board. So we don't like what she's done. Well, we don't want to associate it with us. And it's this effort to shield ourselves from uncomfortable conversations
And I think that's a huge problem, especially on college campuses. And the universities are responding, in my opinion, by encouraging these students to shut down the avenues to learn about the other.
He refers to Harvey Weinstein, the disgraced Hollywood mogul accused of sexual misconduct over decades by dozens of high-profile women. McLaughlin, too, is co-chair of the civil rights practice group of law firm Newman Ferrara. He and Cohen are married. Fairstein has assailed the Netflix portrayal of the prosecution as inaccurate and misleading. Vassar President Elizabeth Bradley issued a statement to the community following Fairstein's resignation, saying, in conclusion, that her hope is that continued debate and discord fosters a community of profound learning and humanity. Reporting from WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College, I'm Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn.
Now to the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. Massachusetts Congressman Richard Neal, who's been undertaking a legal battle to gain access to President Trump's tax returns, says he doesn't believe Democrats who control the chamber should rush into impeachment proceedings. The First District Democrat and I spoke about that and more Tuesday on WAMC's Congressional Corner.
The one finding that Robert Mueller came across that was perhaps the most critical in terms of the election, Russia knowingly, willingly, and enthusiastically interfered in the American election. And they chose a candidate that they wanted to support, and they demonized Secretary Clinton for that very purpose. So whatever one thinks of the Mueller report, the one conclusion that is broad and I think acceptable to all is that Russia played a role in our election.
Let's look forward to 2020 then. How is our election security looking for the next time around? And part two of that question, what did you think of the president's comments that it would be okay to accept dirt from foreign agents?
I think that's outrageous. And I think that for any of us who would be contacted by a foreign agent in an effort to influence an election, the first obligation you have is to notify law enforcement officials, including and foremost the FBI. This is unacceptable. And I think that it sends the argument that your comments from outside would be welcome from a foreign adversary as long as they had an opportunity to influence the outcome of an election. So I've never heard of any president or any vice president or any leader or member of Congress, for that matter, say something like that. And the president attempted, as he frequently does, to walk back the comments the very next day, adding further confusion to the argument. The most important notion here is that if one has information that a foreign adversary is attempting to influence the outcome of an American election, then your obligation as a citizen or as an office holder or as a candidate is to notify the FBI.
You've run a lot of elections. Has that ever happened in any of your runs?
I've never been approached by anybody from the outside. And in fact, I will tell you this, that from time to time, you in the course of a campaign, you'll have somebody who wants to step forward. I can tell you this, and I'd say it under oath, I've never even met with them. I think that it's dangerous. I think that you don't know what their motive is. And I think that you're just better off to stay away from them. And that has been consistent throughout my career.
Let's talk now about the president's tax returns. This is something everybody is focused on lately. The Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, rejected your subpoena for those returns. And then after that, the DOJ issued a legal opinion saying he was on safe ground there. So the question is, what do you do next?
Well, there's nothing that was unexpected. I mean, I think that we feel very strongly that the law is on our side in this and that the law is very clear under the statute. And this goes back a considerable period of time. The last eight American presidents have voluntarily released their tax forms. In this instance, as you would recall, during the campaign, the president said that he would release his tax forms. He then said subsequently that he couldn't release his tax forms because they were under audit. He then suggested that after the IRS said that he could release the tax forms, that in fact, he's welcoming the idea that somebody would release the tax forms eventually. And I thought that the irony of his positions as they evolved was pretty interesting, suggesting that one would demonstrate his acumen as a business person. But in the previous course of the election, he indicated that he intended to release them. And we now are prepared for what I said would happen months and months ago, and that was that this would end up in a court case. So we've been very meticulous, very methodical, and very careful in the manner in which we've proceeded, but we are certainly close to filing the case.
There's a member of your committee from Texas who says you might not get the documents in this Congress without an impeachment process. I mean, is that how long we're looking here?
Well, I mean, one of the things that's important is that one of the parts of the genius of the American constitutional system is it's very hard for one branch to order another branch around. And I think that what we have here is confidence from the House counsel, who I have talked to regularly. And House counsel informs me that they believe that this can be resolved because they believe that the law is very clear. So speculation here really doesn't, I think, help the argument on what we might do or might do not do, because I have scrupulously, consistently followed the advice of the House counsel.
To that end, if I'm understanding their summary correctly, the DOJ said Congress does not have the constitutional right to force the executive to turn those tax returns over.
Well, I think that that's the position that the president's administration and those who have been appointed by the president have taken within the Justice Department. I think that we also have an indication from people inside of the Justice Department and a document that was published in the Washington Post that there are attorneys within the administration who believe that I'm on sound ground.
Okay, and another thing on this, just down the street from here, state lawmakers in New York passed a law authorizing New York State to turn over state tax returns to you, the House Ways and Means Chair. But my understanding is that you haven't pursued that yet. So how come?
Well, one of the issues, again, is what does the House counsel advise you on? And we have no responsibility at the federal level for state tax forms. Now, if they want to turn them over, that's fine. And the House counsel certainly, I believe, will dutifully review them. But our case, we believe, under 1603 of the federal code is clear and concise, and we intend to proceed on the basis of federal law.
Okay, now a political question related to this. President Trump said, hey, the voters didn't care last time. They weren't released, and I won anyway. Is he wrong?
Well, over the last 48 hours, he seemed to indicate that he was okay with the release of the documentation only because it would prove, once again, his business acumen. So the president changes his mind from day to day, from hour to hour, and from tweet to tweet, so you're never quite sure what he means by some of his proposals.
I raised the I word a moment ago. Let me go back to that. There's been some growing support among Democrats in the House to start impeachment proceedings. But, of course, you've got the roadblock of the Senate Republicans. So where are you on that question today?
Well, I've been very close to the Speaker of the House's advice on this. And Speaker Pelosi has taken the position that we ought to follow the facts. And if we end up there, that's fine. But she has also, I think, been very circumspect in her approach because largely that you would need 20 Republicans in the Senate to vote for conviction. And I don't know where you go to get the first one or two in the Republican Senate. And the result of which is you could exhaust the process, whatever finding you had in the House through inquiry. I find it hard to believe that you could move Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans. So what she is saying is that we should follow the facts, continue the case, and present the evidence to the American people, and then we could determine what is warranted as that process finishes. It is also important to recognize here that the wrenching notion of impeachment that goes on for a considerable period of time, I think, might avoid the argument that we have as Democrats that we want to talk about health care, retirement security, job security, climate change, because those issues become obfuscated if you wind up in a pitched battle over impeachment. So I think for the moment, the Speaker's position has been warranted and wise.
Again, that's Massachusetts Congressman Richard Neal, a Democrat from the 1st House District. And that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. And until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.